Okay, some facts about Aesop's. We've already heard a lot of facts about Aesop's. I just wanted to add a few more in here to put them in perspective a little bit for the U.S. economy. The first time I heard this, it surprised me a little bit. There are 11,000 Aesop's. That's a number from the Aesop Association. Department of Labor has put the number more like 8,000. I'm not sure why they don't have the same numbers. But there's a substantial number of Aesop's out there operating. 3,500 of those, about 30% of the total, are majority-owned ESOPs, and about 2,000 of those are 100% owned by the ESOP. In terms of the size of these businesses, 71% of the ESOPs are companies with 250 or fewer employees. So approximately 30% are larger than 250, and the largest has 40,000 employees. Another interesting fact to consider is when a government contractor has an ESOP. The ESOP expense, typically the principal interest payments on the loan and other related expenses, is considered compensation expense for the employees and can be built into the indirect rates. Not any government contractor can get away with that. It's a very competitive environment out there right now. But those that are in demand by the agencies they work for have a chance to pass some of that cost through to the government. So the government repays part or all of the loan. Hope that was the right button.
I don't know what you pressed.
I guess I pressed that right one, not that right one.
There you go.
There we go. All right.
There you go.
Okay, so as was mentioned before by Wayne, an ESOP can be leveraged, meaning that there's cash flowing around at the settlement table because somebody's lending some money, or unleveraged. So unleveraged, no cash flows, there's no financier involved. In terms of a leverage to ESOP, the leverage can come from bank debt, which when I say bank, more specifically, it can be a bank like Access National Bank is a bank, a senior lender. It could also be something called unitranche, which is still sort of, it is effectively senior, but it goes further out the risk curve, and it's like putting senior and junior together into one settlement, one financing. Mezzanine is something that's junior and typically goes behind senior debt and gets it. They're getting out there in the risk curve a little bit more. And lastly, private equity. And the way private equity typically participates is private equity doesn't come in and own 20% or something like that in some sort of minority investment. Rather, they structure what they're doing more like debt, but they have a substantial amount of warrants to provide their upside, to get them to the types of returns that they need. So it can be done with third-party debt, like bank debt, or it can be done entirely with a seller note, or it can be a combination of the above. Now, when the sellers finance the transaction and take back a note at settlement, typically the sellers can get reasonably attractive financing. They can get the same rate of return that a mezzanine lender would get, or unitranche lender. So the seller could be looking at a coupon, 11%, and then maybe some PIK interest, accumulating accruing interest not paid right away, or warrants. Now, we're going to talk about SBA lending in a little bit here. The seller can't get warrants in an SBA loan, but they can get their coupon, they can get the PIK, and they can get a yield of in the mid-teens, certainly. Oop, pointing the wrong way. So some of the benefits of an ESOP in terms of starting to exit one's business relative to more typical M&A activity. The ESOP is always available. You can create it at any time. It's not subject to market conditions, the ability to create the ESOP and do a transaction. The valuation you'll get is subject to market conditions. But you can set up an ESOP and do a small transaction. Typically, people do go for 30% for 1042-related, tax code-related issues. But it can be done at any time. There's a privacy benefit as well versus trying to sell your company to a competitor. If that process fails, your competitor knows all about your company. Word is out beyond just your competitor, possibly too, about sensitive matters. Within an ESOP, it's generally the information doesn't get out. Control, there's limited execution risk, and there's a high probability to close with an ESOP. Once getting through the preliminary feasibility study process, which is usually the first step, a very high percentage of them will close. Management, management might, who knows how management's going to react to the notion that you're potentially selling the company, and then the deal falls through. With a ESOP, what they see is that you're trying to help the employee base by doing the ESOP to help everybody. It shouldn't create any alienation. Speed to close in an ESOP can close.
One comment on that.
Sure.
There are limitations because it's a qualified plan. There are limitations on the ability to give excess ownership through the ESOP to highly compensated employees, officers, and directors. So there are restrictions, just as you would have in a 401k or a profit sharing plan. And this is, again, it's meant for all employees on a non-discriminatory basis. And the way to get stock in the hands of management is to use stock options, restricted stock, phantom stock, whatever, outside of the plan, outside of the ESOP, to give them more ownership, which they're allowed to have.
In terms of leverage, what I'm trying to get at here is if the bank will fund a greater size loan in an ESOP environment than in something that's not an ESOP, like a dividend recap. Reason being, the tax benefits we talked about before. The ability of the ESOP-owned shares to function, to have tax-free income. There's a tax shield that's already been discussed. It's multiple ways. The seller can do the 1042 if the seller is selling shares in a C corporation. And particularly the benefit of an S corp, 100% ESOP-owned, pays no income taxes. Those are some great advantages. Diversification from the seller's perspective, they're going to be, instead of being totally invested in their business and totally at risk for the future, based on the future of that business, they can move money into counter-cyclical investments, perhaps. So the leveraged ESOP, the structural alternatives. First, we have what's called conventional. Over 95% of the ESOPs are done with what we're calling the conventional structure here, and Wayne has already outlined it. Then we're going to talk about the structure of how an SBA loan functions, which is just a little bit different, and we'll go through that here. I'm not going to walk everybody through every step. You can hold on to this. Wayne has already walked through the basics of how the typical ESOP functions, where the bank lends the money to the company lends it to the trust sends the money to the shareholders, and this becomes a stockholder. So now, instead of this indirect meaning the money ends up in the trust, but it goes through the company, we're going to look at the SBA structure, which we call a direct ESOP, leveraged ESOP. So the lender, number one, lends the money to the ESOP. And the company, as discussed, will guarantee the loan to the lender. So the trust then buys the stock in step two, the cash flows to the shareholders, the stock back. Three is the payment of loan payments over time. They go through the trust and out to the bank. And lastly, over time, shares get released to the employees' accounts in the ESOP. So let's take a moment and talk about leverage financing of ESOPs, both conventionally and with the SBA structure. Banks tend to be a little bit conservative about ESOP loans in that typically, especially in the greater DC area, most of these large term loans are going to have fairly light collateral. Or at least to the extent they have light collateral, the bank is probably going to lend maybe 1.5 times EBITDA, perhaps 2 times. And the banks typically want a fast amortization. Nowadays, perhaps about 5 years, the amortization. So some of the seller proceeds would be pledged as collateral and possibly a seller guarantee, more likely just the collateral, not the guarantee. So that doesn't get very far, 1.5 times EBITDA, especially if a company's trading at is selling out for 5 times of EBITDA. And this does presume that the entire company is sold in one transaction. There's no ESOP, then the ESOP is set up, and the entire company is sold in one transaction. In the conventional on the left, 1.5 is not going to get you very far, so you might look at a mezzanine lender. These are people that would look for something like perhaps a 12% coupon plus warrants or PIK interest that accrues. That's going to be expensive. The seller could hold paper 1.5 times of EBITDA. That gets you to a combination of 5 times EBITDA for an enterprise value. It's negotiable on the amortization, preferably very little amortization.
So what you're saying is it's a layered approach. Senior, mezz, and then the seller is junior to everybody and subordinate. Mm-hmm. And added together, you get your 5x EBITDA. But it could be expensive to do that.
Absolutely. And when it says amortization negotiable, I should be a little clearer. Probably no repayments for a little bit of time while the new management team is in there proving themselves that they're up to running the business. Now flip it over to the SBA approach. And really what we've done is we've taken the senior and the mezzanine and rolled it together into one loan from the senior SBA debt for 3.5x EBITDA. It has a substantially longer amortization in that it's typically 7 years. It can be longer. We have done them longer, but seven. The reason it's good to go longer than seven is because when the loan goes direct from the bank to the ESOP and repayment comes directly back from the ESOP, the rate at which that debt is paid down determines the rate at which shares are released to employee accounts. And you don't want to rapidly release all the shares very quickly because then you've got a kind of a generation of employee owners who own the whole company, and people coming in later, there are no shares left. So companies like to go out to 10 years. The bank likes 7 years. There's a happy medium in between somewhere. What's nice here, the seller does not provide any collateral, and the seller does not guarantee the loan. The seller makes a true complete exit. And the financing rate is reasonable. It's not expensive like mezzanine. Now, mezzanine's reasonable too, but it's lower than that. The seller note here specifically, we have it again at 1.5x EBITDA. You might notice it's 2 years PIK. So that means for the first 2 years, no payments go to the seller, but it accrues. The interest
and compounds.
Accrues. Exactly. And after 2 years, it terms out. Because there are no payments for 2 years, the SBA lets us consider that equity, and they want enough equity in the deal, and they view that as equity. So now we're going to just focus on SBA a little bit here. We're getting down to the final slides. As noted, I think before, in an SBA environment, when we're using SBA, the ESOP typically ends up at the end of the day with 100% ownership of the company. The reason is that while the SBA would allow the ESOP to own 51 to 99% and have control, that's a requirement that it owns at 51% or more, at 51% to 99%, the seller is still going to have to guarantee the loan that was just done to put the cash in their pocket. So just remember, when you're thinking ESOP and SBA, you're probably talking about the company being 100% ESOP owned at the end of that transaction after closing. The maximum loan size, SBA loans go up to $5 million, which helps at the lower end of the lower middle market. But to get beyond that, typically mezzanine is helpful. Another way that the $5 million can be helpful for a company that's not exceedingly small is maybe there's already been an ESOP done. Maybe the ESOP already owns 30%. Maybe it owns 40%. Then to take out that final piece, still, you can do $5 million. Mezzanine is not as expensive as it used to be. I talked to somebody the other day. They said for a nice big deal, they would do 11% coupon, 1% PIK, and no warrants. So layering a substantial amount of mezzanine in behind the SBA is not terribly expensive after all. On the SBA piece...
But that's on an SBA loan. Combo loan, right?
Yeah, that would be them going behind the SBA piece. And they would do the same type of rates on a non-SBA piece. Interest rate right now fixed for the life of loan about 6.75%. It could be floating about 1% lower, so you'd be about 5.75%, but it would float. You'd have to make your own assessment of where rates are going. You have to be a small business to be eligible for an SBA loan. Small is not as small as it used to be. $15 million net worth in the business and under is required. And in an ESOP, the net worth is going to, we're measuring it after the closing, so the ESOP's going to probably plummet anyway as a result of the ESOP transaction, putting the new debt on the books. And the net income for the last two full years needs to average $5 million or less. It's not an ESOP, but we did an SBA loan for a company in Tyson's with $230 million in revenue, and they were small. They were small because the partner had bought out his partners a year or two earlier, and they were averaging $4 million in net income, which is a lot of money. So small isn't necessarily small. In an SBA environment, when the ESOP owns 100%, the seller gets a complete exit. They don't guarantee. They don't pledge collateral. That's great. The flip side of it is it really has to be a complete exit. They can be retained as a consultant for up to a year. But they cannot be an employee, they can't be a director, can't be a trustee, none of those roles. They can hold paper, seller paper, again with rates in the mid-teens. But that's the limit of it, the one-year consultant and financing. They can't hold warrants, as mentioned before. Collateral, company assets only, no minimum requirement. We do these and we realize there's really just not a whole lot there. Now, the professional service companies do have receivables, but those companies need lines of credit to borrow against those receivables. So those lines of credit consume all the collateral value in those receivables. So we realize there's just not much there in terms of collateral on these loans. In terms of covenants, financial covenants, SBA requires there be no financial covenants. So there's no balloon, it never comes up for renewal, and you can never default on, the bank can never call the loan unless you're not paying the loan. So that, you know, in good times, people take it for granted, but after what we saw in 2009 and such, it's a nice benefit to not have financial covenants being tripped. One of the ESOPs we did actually was with a large regional bank, and they tripped their covenants, and they had to get out, and we refinanced their ESOP debt with an SBA loan. Other loans are available at the same time as the ESOP financing, receivable lines, furniture, fixture, and equipment loans, junior debt like we've talked about. So now, as I mentioned before, SBA wants to see that there's adequate capitalization in the business after the loan closes. We talked about how seller debt on two-year PIK counts as equity. So how much seller debt? If we're going, I'll read this backwards. If we're doing a single-stage transaction where you're selling 100% to the ESOP at closing, then 25% equity is a minimum that SBA would like. They might go a little lower. We know they like 25%. In the last deal we did, the ESOP already owned 40%. So for that 60% block that was being sold, the seller held 10% of that. So there was still an equity injection. And that was acceptable to SBA. And that is it. We're open to questions.
Any questions that you've got on mechanics of ESOPs, when they're useful, when they're not? More specific questions that you may have, or if not, we're always here after the presentation if you'd like to talk to us about it. And if you're contemplating an ESOP or you want to know more about it, feel free to call Ted or me, and we're happy to talk to you about it. Ted's very adept and deep on the SBA loan side. It's a unique opportunity. As you can see, it may not be a controlled exit if you use SBA lending, because the seller basically has to get out. And the only thing that they can keep and they have to keep is some level of quote-unquote equity in the form of these notes that they're taking back for the sale of their shares. And it's a very limited amount. So the SBA lending, while very beneficial because there are no covenants and there are no seller guarantees, there's a trade-off. The seller has to be willing to part with control, which in my practice is very hard to convince people to do that, and even in their 70s and sometimes in their 80s. But you know, it's a trade-off. So there is a trade-off. You can't have your cake and eat it too, unless you're going to be the ESOP that is completely seller financed, where there's no SBA lending and there's no bank lending. And then if you are completely financing the sale of your shares, taking back a note for 100% of the sale of your shares,